What's going on, America? I'm Chad the Bird. This is the Halloween Spooktacular with the... We have special guests on the show tonight, which is exciting. We have Randall Colburn, who you'll know from Consequence of Sound and also is a known horror buff. And we also have the amazing Adam Burke, who we've been trying to get on the show for years, so I bribed him with beer. And we're going to talk about horror movies. So hold on to your blah as we blah the blah Halloween Spooky. Okay, so we were talking about worst horror movies you've ever seen. I don't know. I can't say that there is a worst horror movie because they're all great because it's gross and I'm, you know, it's as long as I'm nauseous and nervous about sleeping. But like Chopping Mall? Yeah. Chopping Mall might be the worst horror movie I ever sat through.
But
because it's not a horror movie. It's not even a movie. It's like three movies that met and like had lunch, and then the movie's over. You're like, well, which one of you is the winner? Safe to say, Chopping Mall was in the 80s.
Yeah.
Okay, because it's about a mall that's like patrolled by robots. All right, let's do Price is Right rules. Okay, Clark, what year?
87.
Adam?
I've never heard of this movie.
Okay, so it's an 80s movie about a mall patrolled by robots.
Ooh, okay. Oh, well. I'm going to go 85.
85, okay.
84.
Oof, closest. You guys are tied. It's 86.
Ah.
1986, the year of movies.
No, that... I win. I'm closer without going over.
Oh, that's true. Price is Right rules.
Yeah, no, Adam Price is Right rules.
Get out, Clark. So Chopping Mall, a.k.a. Killbots, was the original name of the film. Is,
that's such an 80s title.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no doubt about it that this movie is an 80s film.
They at the marketing meeting, they definitely had mocked up both covers.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Kids, what, you want to see Chopping Mall or Kill Mall?
All right, so yeah, Chopping Mall is 1986. It's garbage, but it's hot garbage, and it makes no sense. But the idea is that there's these... Okay, so kind of, it's sort of like... The horror of the movie, I think, is that there's these robots that go out of control, but they really don't. They just do their jobs.
Yeah.
Which I think... Which is so confusing because I'm like, well, you did this to you guys. Yeah, like, yeah. So it's this mall of the future where they have these robots that patrol the halls at night, which is another thing. Because I'm like, you don't need a lot of security at a mall at night because like you're good. And so they're like these extreme robots that like have lasers and saw blades and they just roll around at night, keeping all the riffraff out. And these kids get locked in the mall because they're having an orgy in the furniture store. And then movie. And that's the whole movie.
There's a lot of movies in the 70s and 80s where the plot is predicated on the fact that they have access to a mall.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's because this mall is either going out of business or we can shoot at night. And you don't need any daylight. Like, that's the whole point of it.
Well, Dawn of the Dead probably popular. They're like, hey, they did it well. Yeah. We can do it well, too.
Oh, man, Dawn of the Dead. Anyway, that's a good movie. We're talking about shit movies right now. Calm down, Randall.
Speaking of shit movies that are in the Chopping Mall vein, there's one called Death Spa.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
The spa that kills or whatever it is.
It literally is the spa that kills.
Oh, so the spa kills. So there's like a masseuse that...
No, he's not. That would have been a much better plot. No, it's the spa. It's really less of a spa and more of a gym.
Yeah, it's more of a gym.
Because
people
get killed with like weight machines and stuff. So I'm like, well, that doesn't make any sense.
Spa.
I've never gone to a weight spa because that's just called a gym, I think, or a YMCA.
Yes.
All right, so what's the worst movie or horror movie you've ever seen, Adam?
Well, I just saw one recently, and it's fresh in my mind. I just saw White Zombie.
That's the Bela Lugosi movie.
Yeah.
That's where we get the term zombie from, is from White Zombie, because when George Romero made Night of the Living Dead, he called them ghouls.
Yep.
But the critics just assumed they were like the characters in the movie White Zombie.
Right.
So that's why we call those things zombies now, is it was an error that they made based on no facts.
I literally just saw Night of the Living Dead 2 days ago at Music Box. They did a restoration. And one thing I noticed is like they never say zombie.
No, they never. And they call them ghouls.
Yeah, they call them ghouls. Yeah.
Anyway, you were saying White Zombie, Bela Lugosi.
It's mainly about Bela Lugosi staring at people. He does a lot of staring at that. And they just decided, it's one of those things, they just decided that a close-up of Bela Lugosi's eyebrows was the most frightening thing.
It is, though. Because what's going on in between them? There's, like, nothing there. And his eyes are piercing.
He has a unibrow in White Zombie.
Yeah. Even better.
Yeah.
That's more terrifying. I think unibrows are terrifying. Like, I don't get it. Just no one likes it. Stop it.
Mm-hmm. It's also this guy. You really want the male lead to die because he goes to get married. He goes to this like jungle honeymoon thing, and he's only got white linen suits.
This movie sounds like it's going to be racist. Because it was what, the 60s, 50s?
No, this is 32.
I've ancient times.
So it's also like one of those movies where they haven't figured out how to make sound movies yet. They haven't figured out that dialogue is good. So like they can do sound, but there's giant stretches of the movie where no one says anything.
Yeah.
That's not too bad. I can't imagine that's awful. All right, what about you?
Well, for me, I think like the movies that really offend me the most as like a fan of horror is just sort of like the really sanitized modern CGI driven horror movies, like the stuff that they literally just pump out. Like, I mean, I mentioned earlier, like the Ouija movie, like they made a movie off a board game. But the thing is, the prequel...
Which isn't even a game. Can we stop calling Ouija boards a board game? No, you're right. It's a piece of junk.
We'll just say a Hasbro product.
That's better.
But yeah, it's like that movie...
It's a placemat that you keep at home.
Yeah, it's so unimaginative. It follows a very strict path. It's a template horror movie. All CGI. It's total bullshit. And like, there's so many of those that come out every year, and I almost always end up seeing them. For Consequence of Sound, which I write for, I'm like kind of on the horror beat, so I see all the shitty new horror movies and have to review them. And it's like every now and then you'll get something interesting, but I think the movie that I hate, that a lot of critics love, that I think... really sent horror down a bad direction for several years was Insidious.
Interesting. Right.
I hated Insidious because
for
me it was all loud jump scares and music stings, like string stings, and also just harsh makeup. Sort of for me, those movies. And I've reviewed Insidious 3, which I actually liked more than the first two. I think the second Insidious movie is one of the most boring things I've ever seen.
I turned it off.
Yeah, it's bad.
I was tired.
But those are movies that they have an idea of what they create things that look scary, but they don't bother to make them scary.
Right.
Like they operate off an idea of what is scary based on maybe like, you know, like comment cards, like surveys taken by people. Like, what's scary? Harsh makeup, you know? And it's like people who smile really big.
Smiling in the living room.
Like, I hate sort of like smiling ghosts, like cackling, laughing, witty ghosts. Like, it drives me crazy. I'm like, ghosts aren't smiling at you. It's like, I get that's kind of creepy and it can work, obviously. But at the same, like, I want my ghost to not
be... So you hated the Frighteners, is what you're saying.
Well, Frighteners is a comedy.
Yeah, it truly is. It's also a really boring movie. I will talk about that.
I haven't watched it in years. I remember liking it.
Oh, is it really?
Well, the problem with The Frightener is not to jump, but I will for a second because I want to make it clear. The first half of The Frightener and the concept of The Frighteners is really good.
Yeah.
And the first half of the movie is really fun. And then there's like a 2-hour stretch in the middle where nothing really happens.
Yeah.
And you're just kind of like, uh-huh. And then shit goes off the rails. And the last 10 minutes is nuts.
It's great. Yeah.
Jake Busey being a serial killer in a flashback. It's really good. The last scene is really good. But man, there's like a solid... 4 hours in the middle
there. I
think
my brain has edited out that.
Yeah, you kind of stop. You kind of glaze out.
I just remember the fun stuff,
yeah, because it's fun, and then it's not. Nothing happens.
So to his point, that whole genre of adjective horror movies, sinister, unpleasant.
Yeah, like unpleasant horror movie.
Disturbing.
Yeah.
I would watch that movie.
I would watch those. And the thing is, I've heard these movies are quite good, but I remember reading some review, because I don't go to see, like, you know, I'm not on the horror beat.
Sure,
so I don't go see many of these. But I remember reading something about Annabelle, and they were like, the latest addition to the Conjuring universe.
Yep.
And I was like, there's a Conjuring universe?
Why?
It's absurd. Here's the thing. I like The Conjuring, and like, I have to watch all those movies, but I hate this idea of the expanded universe.
Stop
like,
doing that.
Conjuring 2, I like Conjuring 1. Conjuring 2 was garbage.
We're going to have words later.
I was getting so mad because everybody kept saying it was like as good, if not better than the first one. And I watched it, and I thought it was so bad.
I would say it was different than the first one. I enjoyed the shit out of that movie.
But I'll say that they put that nun in there just so they could make a movie about the nun later. It served no purpose in the story.
I didn't mind her in there. I just hate the fact that they were like, oh, everybody loves the nun. I'm like, no, everybody just had a good time watching the movie. Stop it.
I know. But I'll say that Annabelle was part of the CGI garbage movie. But then Annabelle Creation, I had to review.
Good.
I was so prepared to hate that movie.
Yeah, like, it's pretty good.
I went to go review it. All I was doing was making snarky ass Instagram posts about it. And then I watched it and I was like, okay, like they're doing, and they're hiring decent directors to, like, they made Ouija with some no name and it sucked. But then they hired Mike Flanagan to make the prequel, and Mike Flanagan knows what he's doing.
Because he did Hush and he did Oculus,
and then he just did Gerald's Game, which is
fucking good if you haven't seen it.
And then, with Annabelle Creation, they hired the guy who did Lights Out. I will say this: I did not like Lights Out.
Okay,
but the guy is talented.
Right. So here's the thing: Lights Out, the short film that he made before the movie came out, that
was great.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Lights Out was so bad that we downloaded the song All the Lights by Kanye West.
Yes.
And like just had that at the ready so that every time she was just like, oh, what do we do now? We were like, All of the Lights. And just like blasted that at just made the movie so much better. All right, anyway, sorry.
Yeah, Lights Out is about basically this demon that can only really operate in darkness. Oh. And so whenever they turn the lights out, it'll go away. And it's a great little 1 minute short that this guy made. And it was really effective. And it was kind of like a masterclass in how to do a jump scare. Right. So when I went and saw that movie, I was like, okay, this is going to be a jump scare movie. I don't like that, but I can be okay with it if they allow the jump scare to be scary on its own. But when I saw Lights Out, I have never, it felt like every time there was a scare, somebody was blowing an air horn in my ear. Like, it was so loud. And that's what I hate. Like, I don't need movies to like punish my ears with like squeals every time something jumps out.
Also, that's not a hard thing to avoid.
Exactly.
Which is what pissed me off the most about that movie. Yeah. Is they're like, well, we just have to make sure that all the lights are on. And I'm like, cool. Solved.
I know.
Problem so solved. We've had light for a long time.
Yeah.
Go to Alaska. Go to Juneau. What the fuck are you doing? And then like she'd be like, oh shit, my flashlight battery died. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
I've never had that problem. How often do you use a flashlight?
And I think that's getting a sequel too.
Oh, boo.
Anything that makes money.
I do know that he's rumored, and that's, what's his name?
David Sandberg.
Sandberg is doing, he's rumored to be doing the Shazam movie, which is interesting.
By the way, you guys mentioned Hush. I didn't like that movie.
I didn't like it either.
Interesting.
I love the director, but that was his one movie I hated because I thought the CGI ruined it. And,
I thought
wait, am I thinking of the one? Is this the one with the
She's deaf and she's in the house.
Yeah.
What are you thinking of?
I'm thinking of Hush.
What is her CGI in Hush?
The end, man. Like, spoiler alert, when she kills the guy.
Oh, didn't she have a fucking hallucination or some bollocks like that?
There's stuff like that, yeah. But like, I remember when she like stabs the guy at the end, it is all CGI blood.
Oh, ew.
And it pissed me off so bad. But also, I just thought that movie was kind of dull.
Well, it pissed me off that he took the mask off.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was my other problem.
Because then I was like, oh, it's like Ed Sheeran. And that's it. And I was like, well, that's not scary.
But also, that's the one sense that she has.
I know. Exactly. What are you doing?
Like, Wait Until Dark is like one of my favorite movies.
Yeah,
and that's about, you know, like a horror movie about a blind woman. And I was like, you can really work with that premise really well. Like, that's such a great the ingenuity of the filmmaking is so strong, and they did not do that in Hush. And the thing is, I really like Mike Flanagan as a director. I like all of his other movies.
I thought the movie starts off pretty good because it's like, cool, that's interesting. How are we going to do that?
Yeah.
And then, for me, it was like 14 minutes into the movie, the dude takes his mask off, and I was like, oh, so it's just a bro.
Like,
your ex-boyfriend? Or a fucking sweaty folk singer. And I'm over it.
I was at South by Southwest when that debuted, and my buddy reviewed
that guy
it.
Looked like he went to South by Southwest. Clark, what's the worst horror movie you've ever seen?
I knew you were going to ask me, and I haven't prepped. I kind of hate just torture porn.
Yeah.
Like just the genre?
I don't watch any of that stuff.
I don't get why that's scary. I get why it's gross.
Yeah. I've punished myself, and I've seen all the Saw movies, I've seen all the Hostel movies, and I've seen some of the offshoots. They're movies that I find interesting, not because of the gore necessarily, but because, especially in the Saw movies, the plotting is like labyrinthian and like really hilariously absurd ways.
After Saw 3, the movies get pretty great, and I enjoy all of those, like, because it's like Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, once you get past, like, oh, we're taking this seriously now, we just have fun, it's like, oh, okay.
But
I get it.
I fucking hate the, like, Saw 3 is one of the most, like, cruel,
it's mean.
Mean movies I've ever seen. But I kind of like the plotting. I like the way that they work with time in those movies. I know it sounds, everybody hates those movies. I hate them too. Like, they really perpetuated a lot of mean. I think mean is such a great word. It's like a lot of meanness, yeah. like in horror. And I mean, I think a lot of that I was writing
well,
about
because
this.
you're on the side of mean, which yeah. is what's upsetting.
Although I will say this, I've only seen the first one, and I only saw it recently. And what I really did enjoy about it, I haven't had this experience in a long time where I watched a movie that literally redeemed itself in the last 45 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
Because with the first Saw movie.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Because I was kind of like, I was kind of checked out. And then once it is one of those weird twists that actually does pay off. And
oh, yeah, it's awesome. Sense,
and isn't a twist for twist's sake.
Yep.
It's like the whole, although there's so many, spoiler alert, there's so many ways that guy could have got accidentally killed. It's a very fucking high risk maneuver.
I know.
To pretend to be a dead body.
Like, what if you had to fart? Like, the whole time you're lying there, you're just kind of like, oh, yeah.
The amount of times I thought they were like, hey, let's saw up this dead body and then use that to climb out or some shit. You know what I mean? There's so many
ways. You got to imagine if they went for the guy, he would have just taken off the mask and be like, all right jigs up, yeah, guys. You got me. All right, we can all go home now.
Did you just say jigs up?
Yeah. Hey, glad you caught that. Good night, everybody. That's the podcast.
I'll just say that, like, I guess what I found, what, like, for me, it's torture porn is interesting because it was such a response to the times, though. Like, I wrote about this recently, just like, you know, it was not only just post 9/11, but it was a lot of reaction to, like, the war and sort of like the shame that we felt sort of under the Bush presidency, which of course now seems quaint, but
it's kind of adorable, isn't it?
You know what, weird connection, do you know that the inspiration for the Saw movies was
what?
Was the Road Warrior, the second Mad Max movie.
Interesting. Oh, interesting.
Do you remember the bit where he handcuffs the guy to a car that is dripping gasoline.
Right.
And he tells him it takes this long to saw through human bone and that's going to blow up in this.
Oh, wow.
So that was, that stuck with the director.
Interesting.
And he always thought that was a great idea to give someone the choice.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You know?
That's neat.
I don't know. That legitimizes Saw a little bit too much. This movie's just garbage. It's hot garbage. All right, so my worst horror film, and I just saw it recently, and it epitomized, like, as soon as it was over, I was like, that's the worst fucking horror movie I've ever seen. It's called The Boy.
Oh, I've seen The Boy.
And it's about zero people that I give a shit about are in this movie, except for the guy he was in Hellboy, the first one. He's the guy that shows up to the Institute. He's the normie.
Okay.
Whose name I don't remember, and you know what? Honestly, I don't want to say his name because then it'll, like, you know, link to this movie, and I want him to forget that he made The Boy. But it's this American woman goes to Britain to take. Okay, here's the plot. So this woman goes on a, like, under the Tuscan sun-esque trip to Britain, to, like, cold nowhere Britain, to take on the job.
It's the name of an actual town in Britain.
It's cold nowhere. it's Gaelic. She goes to this town to become a nanny for this family, that this husband and wife that live in an old house in the middle of nowhere, Woman in Black style, and they've got a boy, and she's gonna take care of him. And the last nanny didn't make it so well, did she? And you're like, anyway. Yeah. So first off, how'd she get on this trip? Like, where'd this ad come from? First off, where? Did you on Craigslist? How, they don't even tell you, like, because it doesn't make any sense. Because you're like, you here? I don't see that.
Right.
Nah. That'd be like if your best friend who's, like, going to grad school was like, oh, by the way, I'm going to go to Wales for 6 months mm-hmm. to babysit a child. You'd be like, okay, we need to sit down and talk this out. Because what? So she goes, she gets there, and it turns out that the boy is a doll. It's a little glass doll.
Yeah.
And the parents are like, don't you love our son? And she's like, the fuck? But she doesn't want to, like, lose the job because they're going to pay her a lot of money. Plus, she's already in fucking Britain, so, like, she's not leaving. So she's sitting there.
This is Mary Poppins and the Real Boy.
Yeah, right. It's like a reverse Mary Poppins, where Mary Poppins didn't know what she was getting into and was, like, tricked into taking care of this child who's actually a doll.
You know, by the way, you know a much better movie title for this movie already? It's Oh Scare.
Good night, everybody. All right, so, okay, now we're going to do the top threes.
Okay.
All right. So let's go down the line. Randall, top three. Doesn't have to be in any particular order, just how you feel. Top three horror films that you're like, these, and I'm serious, these are movies that scared you.
Yeah.
And that you're just like, don't deal with it.
It's like I think that's a better way to phrase it. Like, it's always hard for me to say favorites.
Right.
Yeah. Like, because favorites is always different in a lot of ways. But, like, I'll say the movies that scare, that always continue to scare me is one of them. And we were talking about this over on Facebook because I posted five horror movies I really love. But yeah, Rec, Spanish, 2007, found one of the first
Rec, found REC, horror movies. For those of you listening at home.
Rec Recorder. That, to me, is the best found footage horror movie ever made.
Solid.
And that's it. I love Blair Witch Project, too, so it's, like, very tied with those. But Rec, to me, is relentlessly terrifying. The gore effects are amazing. It is so mean in a good way.
Yeah.
Like, it's ugly and nasty, but also...
But it's ugly and nasty not because you're following that part. You're following this person who gets caught up in the ugly and nasty.
Yeah,
and you really give
like
a fuck about
her. The world is, like, so rough, but you know the main character is such like this light within it, and I love her, but it's like I love it because it's so relentless, it's so cruel in ways that are very satisfying. But what I love most about it is the sense of disorientation it creates, and this idea that it uses found footage in the way it should be used, which is that we have a limited perspective.
Right, to have
the limited perspective, like, because basically it's about, you know, this TV crew who's following firefighters on a routine call. And then they go in this apartment building because there's a call of this woman who is, you know, sick and is being violent. And then it ends up becoming a very violent, horrifying situation. But what's so scary is that we start to see the building getting quarantined while they're inside the building.
Okay.
And there's no, they don't know why. Like, that's the great thing, because since our perspective is limited to this one camera, we never really find out the extent of what's happening and why they're being quarantined. And then you got guys coming in and hazmat suits, and then all these people are like, what is happening? And that, to me, is disorientation, combining that with sort of like traditional scares and horror tropes that are time tested but, you know, very good.
Also, like, one of the scariest final monsters ever in the history of horror movies.
I haven't seen it, so
no, we won't spoil it, but
I'll just say the last like 10 minutes are probably the scariest thing I've ever seen.
And I mean, it's like, it's kind of like that movie The Raid, where the whole movie is just about getting to the top of the building. But instead of a kick-ass, you know, martial art film, you know, it's a scary-ass zombie kind of thing that culminates in the you want to be anywhere but there.
Yeah,
like that's the best part about
it's
it.
It's perfect. So yeah, that's a movie I always go back to and always push on people, because a lot of people haven't seen it, and it's on Shudder if people have Shudder, but you can get it. But yeah, try to get the one with subtitles and not dubbing, because the dubbed version really sucks. The dub is very bad.
Oh yeah, no, watch it in the Ridge. And I think that goes without saying for most movies, dubbing over is stupid.
Dubbing is always bad.
We can read, so just sit down.
I'll also say another one of my favorite horror movies is The Descent. Which also came out, I think, in 2006.
That movie's sad.
Yeah. That's on my list, too.
Yeah.
That's what I didn't like about it. Like, it's got one of the best creature reveals ever in the movie, but at the end, you're just like, oh, those poor people.
It is really sad. But it's also, like, I love it, too. It's kind of like with Rec, where it has multiple levels. Yeah. In addition to being a good creature feature, you know, it also has all these cool interpersonal dynamics. The characters are so well drawn.
Yeah, that's why it sucks. Because you're just like, oh, I don't want to care about anybody. I know, man.
And then the thing is, like, the creatures don't even show up for a while. The first half of the movie, the horror comes from the claustrophobia.
Right. And even the creatures aren't that scary. It's really not about them.
That's why I always say the key to a good horror movie is that the it's not about the monster.
Yeah.
Right. Or the monster represents something that's bigger.
Right.
Like the Babadook, the monster is grief.
Yeah.
I didn't have another example.
Well, I'll say this. Like, the monster, like, I love Babadook. It's like one of my favorite horror movies.
It's not one of your top three, though, right?
No.
Okay.
But I'll say that my problem with the Babadook is that the monster does need to represent something else, but it can't overwhelm the horror. And like, my problem with the Babadook is that in the final, like, couple minutes.
Spoiler alert, stop listening.
Well, not even a huge spoiler, just like the message, the metaphor overwhelms the horror. And I want things to be scary first and foremost,
and then it
can have the resonance. So I love Babadook, but that's my only little beef. And then, but then my other one, and this is sort of like it's a classic, but to me, it's the most I've ever been scared during a horror movie, and it really maintains, is Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
I find that movie to be sloppy in all the best ways, and it is, like, you know, the final, you know, act of that movie, to me, is just like, I'm trying to find the right way. It's disorienting in the same way as Wreck, because you really don't know what's going on.
It feels like a found footage movie, even though it's not. It's just shot like that.
Yep, it's shot like that. And, like, I think that that's a great example of how you can, how no budget can often result in, like, the scariest shit.
Yeah.
And, like, the acting is so unhinged. Everybody looks like they're on drugs. Like, the...
Because they are. And that's why it's scary.
There's so much restraint, but at the same time...
There's a character in a wheelchair in that movie.
Yeah, Franklin, yeah.
Yeah.
And he...
Like, Jesus.
And, like, that's one of the only sections that actually has blood in it.
Yeah.
And because that movie is actually quite bloodless, but it doesn't matter because...
There's a guy chasing me with a fucking chainsaw.
I know! And, like, and then the hammer and just, like, all those moments. Like, that movie understands, like, the bluntness of horror and how great... Like, the moment when she's over the bucket at the end and they're just hitting her with, like, a hammer in the head and, like, screaming, like, die, bitch. Like, and, like, but they have... There's no reason why they should be doing that. Like, the more you explain horror, the more it dilutes it, usually.
Right.
And that's why I love, like, the three movies that I've mentioned, they all carry a certain amount of ambiguity to them, like what the monster is, why the horror exists and everything. But those are all very good examples to me of how you can create disorientation and let the audience feel as if they are a step behind as opposed to a step ahead. And a lot of great horror movies are like, they keep the audience a step ahead and the horror comes from that. But movies like Texas Chainsaw and Wreck are great because the audience is always a step behind and you feel as if you're never going to catch up.
Right.
And that's scary to me.
Because, yeah, you're falling down the well. Yep. There's no way out. Adam, what are your three?
Well, each one of mine I agree with is Descent. I think Descent is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pair up 2 '70s ones, and these are pretty obvious ones, but I didn't see The Exorcist until years after it came out. It was actually banned in Ireland. But,
oh, wow.
First time I saw The Exorcist, I think that's genuinely fucking terrifying.
I think it still is.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting about The Exorcist? And maybe I'm wrong on this, but you made a really good point. It doesn't have a lot of jump scares.
Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't. It's like you.
The director's cut does, though, because there's the walking down the stairs part is not in the original theatrical.
Right, but it's not a jump scare.
You know, I don't know. That part's pretty fucking terrifying.
But it's not like bang. It's
right.
Like,
yeah. Okay.
It's like you look up and she's walking down the fucking stairs, and a lot of it you're just kind of trapped in the room.
Yeah.
Watching something awful happen, and it does the other thing which I really really love. Like, it does these weird fades in to, like, arcane imagery, and you're just, it's got that great thing of making you question, like, it was that on purpose?
Yeah. Did I see that? What does that mean? It looked like, it looks like a painting.
And the one I would marry that with is Don't Look Now.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, with Donald Sutherland.
Yeah.
Isn't that the one where they found out that they probably actually really did have sex, which makes makes it even hotter, let's be honest.
One I would just add to that, which isn't strictly a horror movie, but I think in terms of, you were saying movies that scare you, just movies that make you feel... unease, would be Night of the Hunter.
Yes.
Is that Robert Mitchum?
Robert Mitchum.
Yeah.
The character from Poltergeist is clearly lifted from Robert Mitchum. But that movie...
He looks just like him, right? He's wearing, like, that wacky-ass hat and quoting Bible verses.
Yeah, and it's not, in the strictest sense, a horror movie, but it does have that thing. I just love the words, like, this guy is this beloved movie actor is going to be chasing these children for 90 minutes.
That's the whole movie, you know. No, I would call that movie a horror movie for damn sure, because, like, the concept of it is about these two kids that know that they can't get away and they've got to survive.
Yeah.
Even though there's no blood or supernatural things, it's horrifying.
It's got a really beautiful shot in it where, like, you know, where they he kills a woman.
Right.
And they just cut, she's in a car underwater and her hair is flowing.
Yeah.
It's such a beautiful shot. Like, I think that's a great, one of those movies just is a sense of unease.
Yeah.
Through that entire movie, that's like, that's what gets me about horror movies too. Like, when they make you feel uneasy.
My top three... and then I'm coming for you, Clark, so get ready. Yeah, get fucking ready. Number one movie that scared the shit out of me was Event Horizon.
Yeah,
I love Event Horizon.
With Sam Neill and Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Because I didn't know it was a horror movie when I saw it. I thought it was going to be Crimson Tide in space. And it was like four.
And boy, was it?
It was not. It could not have been farther from that. And it made me hate space.
There's a lot of blood.
Yeah, there's a lot of that, though.
Bloody movie.
It made me hate Prodigy because they did the song "Funky Shit" is in the credits for that movie.
Oh yeah.
It made me hate spaceships. It everything about it was cold and mean, and I hated every minute of it. Even though it's a really solid movie that everybody did a great job in, especially Sam Neill has the best performance of an actor with no eyes. Yes. Like stunning.
I think that movie actually has one of the most accurate representations of what would happen to you if you're blown out of an arrow.
Right, and they even give him that he has an exercise for it, which they actually have. That's a real thing where he's like, you got to blow all the air out of your lungs because you don't just explode when you fly.
No.
Like you can survive it. You just have to do the thing.
You know the scariest thing about what happens to him when you're out in space without a suit, the tears boil out of your eyes.
Yeah. Fun, huh? Space sure does kick ass. That's what I loved about Interstellar too. It's like, no, space blows. We don't want to do that. No, everything about space sucks. Nobody wants to go there.
Event Horizon is one of those ones too. It's one of those. There is a cut of that movie that is apparently way worse.
Yep. Oh, that's good. More violent. Yeah.
I am fine with that. I have never felt more like someone cut me slowly with a scalpel than I did during that movie. Because I was like, I feel like I'm going to look down and my intestines are going to be on the floor. Yeah. And I'm going to be like, well, shit, that movie cut me.
What's great, too, because not only is it a horror movie in space, it's specifically a H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah, it's super like Lovecrafty demon shit because it's stuff you can't describe. And it turns into a Tool video at one point where you're just kind of like, what the fuck is that?
That is a Tool video. That is true.
It's just this bloody meat flying everywhere and people that screaming.
Fucking engine, the swirly engine.
Oh, it's awful. I hate that thing. I never want to go there. No, all of that movie from the beginning to the end is the scariest thing. Okay, my second scariest movie ever is Dead Silence. Which you've never seen. It's a puppet,
puppet.
It's a fucking ventriloquist doll.
I've seen it, yeah.
No. Is it good? No. Is it scary? Yeah, it's fucking scary.
Uh-huh. I haven't seen it since I first saw it.
Oh, God. And the fucking warden from Shawshank Redemption is in it.
Oh, yeah.
And he's supposed to be the good guy.
Like,
nah, don't go anywhere near that guy. And he's got like 8 pounds of white makeup on his face. And he's dressed like a dummy. And no, all of that movie. And that's James Wan.
Yeah, that was his follow-up
to
Saw.
Who fucking throws all kinds of shit at you that you're not ready for. And there's just dolls and dummies everywhere. And they're all turning their heads slowly. And sometimes they move their mouths. And you're like, oh, fuck this whole movie. Kill it with fire. No, zero. Then the scariest movie ever made, in my opinion, and has yet to be rivaled by any other film, is Meet the Feebles by Peter Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
I hate that movie.
Everybody should hate that movie. If you ever meet someone that's just like, that movie's amazing, you unfriend that person as soon as you can.
You are so right.
That movie is a disease, and you don't want it in your place. You don't want it in your house. You don't want it in your eyes. It infects you.
Have you seen any of his other earlier movies, Peter
like
Jackson?
Like Dead Alive.
Dead Alive, and then I wrote a piece recently
Bad
on
Taste.
Bad Taste.
I like Bad Taste.
Taste is fun.
It's fun. It's gross.
Bad taste makes me nauseous.
It's gross. Disgusting. It's mostly just vomit, but it's pretty good.
The bit that it's got one because I love to try to explain inexplicable things in movies, and I love to try to explain the bit in which one of the characters in Bad Taste grabs one of the aliens, rips his head off. It comes out with the spine attached.
Yeah.
He drops it on his foot, kicks it out the window, and he goes, "Still got the old magic."
You do that a lot, do you? Maybe we should talk about what is she up to, man? No,
I forgot about that.
For those of you who don't know what Meet the Feebles is, good. You're better off.
It's gross.
It's awful, yeah.
Peter Jackson made this.
I couldn't make it through the whole
thing. It's disgusting. Peter Jackson made this fucking nightmare fever dream that he had one night on too much cocaine or something, where none of his friends stopped him halfway through and was like, "Hey, buddy, maybe we don't do this. Maybe we just play some kickball or something, because you're clearly working some shit out." It's about the best way I can describe. Okay, so first off, Google if you dare. But it all you need to see is the trailer and you'll know what the fuck's going on. It's sort of like The Muppet Show if The Muppet Show took place at the height of the like cocaine's 80s, where everybody backstage was, it'd be like if you really went backstage at the Comedy Store in LA and like met all of your favorite comedians. It would be like that, except they're all puppets, like Muppet Show puppets, and they're all on drugs. One of them has AIDS. One of them is drunk. One of them's having Vietnam flashbacks in the men's room on heroin. Yeah. That's what that movie's about.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be funny. And somebody thought that was funny, and that person is a serial killer.
Yeah. It's one of those tiresome movies where you're a college mate will show it to you. It's like, you gotta see.
You don't.
This is so fucking extreme. And it's like, it's kind of boring. It is the thing I like least. It's like, like something that's just mean is another good word, but it's just gross.
And it's boring. It's so gross.
When things just are there for the sake of shock, like they become really dull if you're used, you know.
Just in case you're curious, there is a character in the movie that is a fly that literally eats poop. That's all it does. Yeah. And it's graphic. It's just like, oh yeah, I'm right up in a poop right now. And there's a fly eating poop. And it's just constantly munching on poop and looking at the camera and covered in poop.
It's John Waters' Muppet movie.
Yes. Yeah.
It's John Waters' Muppet movie directed by Ed Kemper is what that is. Because, like, it's a relentlessly gory, stupid, fucking, gross, angry movie.
Yes.
This is on your best of
This is the best. This is the scariest movie I've ever seen.
And I know. I'm loving that pretty much all of your best ofs end with you saying, I fucking hate this movie.
You should. I think you should walk out of a horror movie that is actually scary and be like, never again. Yeah. Never fucking again. Clark, what is your... At least give us one, buddy.
I will a plus one Texas Chainsaw.
Yeah,
solid.
That's amazing.
Solid.
Dawn of the Dead, the original.
Yeah.
Just because when I saw it, it was kind of such a brain breaker.
It really proves that slow zombies are the scariest zombies because, fast zombies, you're like, well, fuck yeah, just you don't have a chance. But you do have a chance with slow zombies because you're like, well, I mean, they're slow. But if you're caught in the room and you're out of bullets, oh, that's a slow death. That sucks.
I'm pretty sure it was rated X.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
So it was like one of those films you just couldn't see when you were a kid.
Yeah.
It was pre-DVD and video.
Interesting.
Some random screening at a college campus.
Ugh.
And it was, midnight. And it was just like, really, really got to us. And the other one I'll throw out, just because I remember it creeping me out watching it alone late one night, was Prince of Darkness.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I've heard that.
Talk about Lovecrafty. That's a Lovecrafty movie.
Good VHS cover.
Solid.
There's that videotape thing. And it's just creepy. And
nice. I haven't seen that in years. I need to rewatch that.
Great Videodrome list. Was that from...
That's Cronenberg, right?
Yeah, that one was... I remember watching that creepy...
That movie's gross. Not as gross as Society, which is super fucking 80s gross. That's lots of like...
Ed Begley's ass face.
Yeah, right? It's when he's a butthole. That's not a joke, people.
I know, yeah.
Ed Begley plays a butthole in a movie. And it's not nearly as bad as Meet the Feebles. But it sounds like it should be.
Regarding Dawn of the Dead, can we talk about Tom Savini's origin story real quick?
Please.
Do you know about this?
Yeah, maybe.
So Tom Savini, you've probably seen in a bunch of Romero movies. He's like the skeeviest looking guy.
Yeah. But isn't he a creature effects guy? Like, isn't that how he started?
He is. So
he's the pioneer.
He's like a stuntman. Yeah, and he did a lot of this stuff. And he created a lot of the original effects for Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead. He was a war photographer. That's the grossest thing about his thing. He was a photographer in Vietnam. So he took a lot, and I think he was like seconded to like a medical division. So it was his job to take photos of wounds. So that's what he did. So he had this fucking backlog of all these like really gross fucking like severed limbs and shit. So when it came to doing creature effects, like, he knew exactly what to do.
Wow.
So wild.
So then he...
But yeah, he was an actor, too. He was, in all the movies.
And then he ends up wielding a machete in a mall.
Well, I love him in that movie, Dawn of the Dead,
It's kind of like when Christopher Lee was on set for Lord of the Rings, and he had to get stabbed in the back, and he was turned to Peter Jackson and was like, that's not what happens when you get stabbed in the back. I know what happens when you stab somebody in the back, and here's the thing. Do you know about this?
Okay. By the way, that just sounds like a really prissy actor thing to
say. Right, no, that's not how it works.
I've been stabbed in the back. Just ask the theater. Theatrical reviewer of the Burlington Times.
Because Christopher Lee was a Secret Service agent, and a lot of people
think
may have been the inspiration for James Bond, because he and Ian Fleming were partners. And totally were those guys that wore tuxedos under their wetsuits, which is fucking badass.
Wow.
So not only was he Dracula and also the wizard that turned in The Lord of the Rings, but he was fucking James Bond. Anyway, R.I.P. Also, he died. The last thing he did was fucking vocals for a metal album.
Yeah,
for several metal albums.
He was making metal albums all through his 80s.
God damn it.
Yeah.
We could all wish we could be that cool.
I know.
Anyway, so being that he was actually in the Secret Service, that scene in Lord of the Rings and Return of the King, spoiler alert, I guess. I mean, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you're not going to know. When Wormtongue stabs him in the back. Peter Jackson had him do all this stuff, and he stopped him and was like, actually, that's not what happens when you stab a man in the back. I'll tell you what happens. And like, explain, like, you make this noise, and like doing it like in that Christopher Lee, like, no, you make this noise. It's like, all right, we're good. Thanks, Dracula. could we go on, please? But yeah, no, he stopped production and told him, like, all right, this is how you do it. So that scene when he gets stabbed in the back, it's pretty accurate. I want to put it out there.
Christopher Lee also in one of the most unsettling horror movies of all time, the original Wicker Man.
Yeah, the Wicker Man.
It's that movie is it's like unceasingly frightening. And yes, they do a really good job of being like, it's scary in the daytime, shot by VHS cameras, where everyone's singing weird little like tunes. Oh, it's awful. That movie's so scary.
I love how they do it.
Corn rigs and barley rigs and dancey times and dancey lanes.
What's great
about
it is really subtly, you don't root for Edward Woodward.
Right. No, you want him to go down.
It's weird. He's not really a bad guy, but he's a dick.
Judgmental.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's kind of.
And all these people seem to be having a good time. Like, they're all just dancing around. What are you being a dick for?
I know. I love that the way that they sort of subvert the traditional narrative of like the detective solving a mystery, because they make him not a bad person, but someone who is intolerant and judgmental. And like, that doesn't make him bad necessarily. It's just that he's so bound by his own religion that he can't see beyond that.
Right.
And that's sort of what makes, that's ultimately leads to his downfall as well. Yeah.
It's got one of the greatest, oh no, this is the end of the movie endings of all time.
Yep.
You're kind of watching it and then they like pan back and you're like, Oh fuck.
Is that what we did? Jesus.
Funny story. My wife has a church group and she
is into Wicker Man.
No, but she wanted to start like a movie night with some of her church friends. And it's a very like progressive lefty church. And so they all wanted to watch horror movies. Like, they're like, what can we watch as a church group what excuse do we have to watch horror movies? So basically she was like, can you curate some like religious themed horror movies for us to watch? And so I'm like, yes. And so Wicker Man's the first one we're gonna
watch. Solid choice.
Yeah, which I'm super
stoked. That'll make all
them
evangelicals rethink their shit.
No, these are not evangelicals, but if I did show it to them, then they'd probably put me in the Wicker Man.
Exactly. Like, I think, and like all evangelicals tend to do, I think you missed the point of what we were trying to tell you. But okay, man, you got to live your life. All right, final question, and then we're going to dance away into this terrifying night of mist and nightmares. Okay, if you could be any horror movie trope, villain character, or however you want to describe it, what would you be? So, like, example, would you be the werewolf? Would you be Jason? Would you be Freddy? Who would you be?
Sociopathic bully.
Oh, nice.
Because I love bully archetypes, and I love the new season of Stranger Things because they introduced a kind of a cool, like, he's not like how Steve was a bully in the first season where he's like a bully, but he's also kind of got a heart of gold under there. Like, they introduced like the Henry Bowers, you know, of Stranger Things. And
I love that everybody knows what that, like, in this room, the bully from It.
Oh, right.
He's one of my favorite characters from the Kingverse ever. And
he's the worst, man.
He's so evil. Like, yeah. And I love that's what King was always good at. He did in Christine, he did in Carrie, where he takes the kind of the bully archetype and he shows that, you know, it's something that you carry with you from your child, is like a fear of certain bullies or people who, you know, the kid who always made fun of you. And what so many movies tend to do is show that person as a wounded, like they come from a rough life.
Right. It's like, no, this guy's a dick.
They're redeemable. But his thing is, he's like, no, they're not just like irredeemable, but they're sociopathic monsters and they will kill you.
Right.
And like, that's what I love. And so yeah, like I think that's like one of my favorite archetypes is kind of the bully that achieves a level of evil that is beyond, like he transcends the mere bully. You know?
Awesome. Adam?
Mine's super specific. One of my it's not necessarily a scary movie.
For those of you who don't know, he closed his eyes as he said super specific, so you know this is going to go places.
Just one of my favorite horror movies is the 1931 Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. March. And Frederick March's Hyde in that is just an asshole. He's not really a monster. He's not really a monster. He just swans around. He's got this weird simian face. And he just walks around London hitting people with his cane. Just ordering way too much beer. And just being a dick. And he's just so fucking confident. Like, that's it. He's got a top hat. And he's just fucking yelling at people. Yeah, that's who I'd be.
That's funny.
I'd be Frederick March's Mr. Hyde.
Clark, who would you be?
I'll say, professor that tries to warn everybody.
Nice. Like Robert Englund in Urban Legend.
Yeah. Nice.
Oh, or the current EPA.
Yeah, what's that guy's deal? He looks like a fucking movie villain, doesn't he? Oof. I'm going to go with Audrey 2 from Little Shop of Horrors.
Yes.
I think being a man-eating plant that can also kick ass at like R&B and like sweet songs would be like, I'm a singing plant, but I sing to you and my voice is silky and smooth, and then I just fucking eat you. So into it.
I love
and you don't have to do anything. You just kind of sit there and you just like get everybody to do shit for you.
His laugh is great in that.
Oh yeah, and it's awful because like when that giant plant like kicks its head back and laughs and you can see all the way down its throat, you're like, that's the last thing you see? Jesus. As you are getting swallowed, you're like, he does have a really good laugh, doesn't he?
There's a great factoid about it. If you liked it, I love that movie so
hard. Oh, it's fantastic.
And more props need to go to the actors, because when it was the full-size puppet, you probably know this, that they've sped up the action so it looks smoother. So all those actors had to do all the stuff super slow.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
So then when it gets sped up, it would be regular speed.
Yeah,
so
man. That movie's full of amazing trickery and just good fucking times. And is still legit terrifying.
It's great.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, it's fun and it's goofy, but it's also, like, grimy and kind of dark and mean.
Yeah.
And
it's very much just, like, pre-gentrification New York, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, because the story of Seymour Krelborn is super relatable, because you're just like, I work at this shitty job, and then I became a fucking rock star, and I killed all my friends. I guess that makes sense. Sure. Is that relatable? I don't know. Randall, what do you got coming up? What's happening with you?
You can catch my writing at the AV Club, the Onion AV Club, and then Consequence of Sound. That's where I do most of my work. I also host a podcast called The Losers Club. We're a Stephen King podcast. We are the premier Stephen King podcast
on
the
web.
And we just did some great interviews with like Mike Flanagan, who directed Gerald's Game, Zach Hilditch, and Thomas Jane from 1922, and on Andy Muschietti from It. And so yeah, it's a great pod. We're loving it. We're actually interviewing Joe Carnahan today.
Nice.
Because he's hosting a screening of Maximum Overdrive at Chicago Cinepocalypse. And so yeah, so we're doing kind of a talk about King with him.
I'm so glad that never came up, because we could talk about that movie.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts. And but we've talked about it on the pod a lot. So yeah, anyways, Losers Club, Stephen King podcast from Consequence of Sound. You can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, all those things. So do subscribe.
Nice. Mr. Burke, what's happening with you?
You can catch me in St. Louis for the Flyover Comedy Festival from the 9th through the 11th.
Fantastic. That's way cooler than anything I'm doing. Clark, where can we see you next?
I'm going to be editing this.
Nice! And you can always find me at the Paper Machete at the Green Mill. Special thanks to the Barracudas for the kick-ass song Promises. Please email me at thebirdchat@gmail.com. Come to the Green Mill every Saturday at 3 o'clock. It's free. And you can see me there. Burke's sometimes there, sometimes. Randall's sometimes. Sometimes it's the three of us in the corner of the bar screaming at each other about how terrible this person's opinion was. Which is always the best part of the show. And subscribe to their podcast. Subscribe to my podcast. Burke, are you on any podcasts right now? Are you doing anything besides...
I'm on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Wait, Don't Tell Me. Yeah,
oh,
that's,
nice.
That's the one. You should be listening to that anyway. And, happy Halloween, everybody. Eat yourself some candy, and then, have a salad, because it's good for you. I don't know. Clark, do you have any funny, weird Halloween-y things to say to people?
Feed me, Seymour.
Nice. I agree. All right, let's get drunk.